Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include J.W. Jung Seed Company, Wollersheim Winery, and Rockweiler Insulation. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from The Hostel Shop in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, helping customers rediscover the joy of cycling with recumbent trikes and bikes and 24 years of recumbent experience. More at hostelshop.com.
Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say, it's all right.
It's that time of the year again when the sun is high in the sky and thoughts turn to using that energy, not just for warmth, but for power and a better future. I'm Glenn Moberg. It has been a long, cold, lonely winter, but today we take a familiar journey on Route 51 to the Highway 10 exit in Stevens Point and then east to the tiny community of Custer, where thousands of people will be making a pilgrimage to the Midwest Renewable Energy Association headquarters for the 25th Annual Energy Fair, and that's in just 8 days, starting Friday, June 20th. Those fields will be filled with vehicles and campers on a mission of saving the world by building a green energy future and reducing our dependence on fossil fuel. This year's Energy Fair contains more than 200 exhibitors and workshops, including a clean transportation show, green building demonstrations, music, food, and some great keynote speakers. We will be hearing from one of them later in the program. Marcin Jakubowski, the founder of Open Source Ecology, a collaborative of engineers, producers, and builders developing something called a Global Village Construction Set, 50 blueprints of the most important machines for modern civilization, so manufacturing, production, and distribution can happen in as many different local neighborhoods as possible, allowing people to cut the ties to the systems run by the big international corporations. As always, we welcome your input. If you've got questions about this year's Energy Fair, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a message on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. But first, let's welcome our guests. We have Lane Cozzolino of Central Rivers Farm Shed of Stevens Point, one of the participants in this year's fair, and also with the answers to your questions and mine, Ellie Jackson, the events coordinator for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us today. And I want to also mention that we are giving away passes to the Energy Fair at the website wpr.org/central. That's wpr.org/central. Well, Ellie Jackson, it's been a big milestone for the Energy Fair, your 25th year.
Yeah, yes, it has been. 25 years of celebrating renewable energy and sustainable living, and we're really excited.
Did you folks, I know you weren't involved at the beginning, but the people who were when they started that Energy Fair back in 1989, did they suspect that they would be celebrating the 25th anniversary in the year 2014?
You know, I'm really not sure that they did. The impetus for the Energy Fair, sort of what kicked it off, was right in 1989. There was an article published in Home Power magazine, which is a do-it-yourself magazine for folks that are interested in energy and specifically, you know, learning about renewable energy and kind of being off-grid. And there was an article published by Richard Perez, who's the chief editor at the time, saying, you know, hey, everyone, we're going to be celebrating 1990, which is the 20th anniversary of Earth Day. We now have Clean Air Acts, Clean Water Acts, but we haven't talked about energy. And I think we all need to get together and do that. Mm-hmm. And so there was a call to action for folks to talk about renewable energy. And there was a group of people in Amherst, Wisconsin, who said, yeah, we should talk about renewable energy, and let's do it right here in central Wisconsin. And so, you know, I think it was a call to action that they heeded. I'm not sure that they ever expected it to grow into what it is now.
Well, the ripple effects of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association and that energy fair are felt all across central Wisconsin, all across the Midwest, even all across the country. Lane Cozzolino, Central Rivers Farm Shed in Stevens Point, does sustainable agriculture all year round.
Yeah, absolutely. We are excited to be with or to partner with the MRA on lots of occasions throughout the year, but obviously the energy fair is this time to come together and talk about what do local economies look like? What do thinking about our own producing our own energy, thinking about producing our own food, or knowing the people that do are really key to that. So
how has the event grown over the past 25 years? You've got 20,000 people showing up there.
Yeah.
Every weekend that it happens now.
Yeah, so in 1990, the very first fair, there were a couple of canvas tents set up and, maybe 20 workshops that people could come to and a few hundred people, which was a success at that time. But over the years, people just have kept coming because it is the place to go to learn from experts, folks that have PhDs in soil science, but also people that just know from doing for 25 years what renewable energy and sustainable living looks like. So now, how it's grown, we have over 200 workshops that span the spectrum of sustainability, from beekeeping to talking about renewable energy, to talking about community development, and right, 20,000 people from all over the country and some from all over the world who very intentionally make it to Custer, Wisconsin. You don't stumble upon Custer, Wisconsin. So it's this place where people come together to form a community, to learn and connect and share information.
Now, the energy fair is the thing most people think of when they think of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. Mm-hmm. Did the association precede the energy fair? What's the connection, and what are the other things that you do throughout the year?
Yeah, that is a great question, because most people do show up for the fair and kind of think that's what the MREA is, and it's a huge part of what we are. And it did. It started the MREA, right? The first fair happened, and a few more happened, and then we thought, we could keep doing renewable energy education year round. And so that has grown into the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. So now we have professional level workshops for folks looking to get into renewable energy as a career path. And people can take online classes through the MREA or find out our schedule around the Midwest. But
And you've increased your blueprint, too. You're in Custer right now, Ellie, but your office is in Milwaukee.
We do. We have one office in Custer, Wisconsin, and one office in Milwaukee. And then the trainings that we offer, we can partner with just about anyone anywhere in the Midwest. So oftentimes we get to work with technical colleges and train trainers to then train their students and really grow this industry of renewable energy and make sure that there are people who are professionals who then can connect with homeowners and organizations and offer that information to really grow an understanding of what renewable energy is. What does solar look like on my home? What will that look like in my pocketbook? How will that save me in my utility bill at the end of the month? And so we're growing that job market. But the flip side of that is any market also needs a consumer base. And so that's kind of where, events like the Energy Fair come in, so people can come in and learn about what being a smart consumer can look like too.
And what's new at the fair this year?
Oh, man. Well, every year we have new workshops, so over 200 workshops, and some of them include demonstrations. So, folks that maybe are interested in learning about what local foods they can use to prepare meals can come and learn from different chef demos. So at noon every day of the fair, people can come and learn from Christian's Bistro, which is a restaurant in Plover, Wisconsin, the Underground Food Collective, which is a restaurant out of Madison, and then La Merenda, which is a delicious restaurant out of Milwaukee. All those chefs will be coming up and teaching you how to use local ingredients to prepare your own meals. That's something that's new. But we all the time, there's all of these different elements of the fair that keep coming back, but there's always new live music and new people and new exhibitors. One fun thing that we're doing this year is a seed swap with Seed
Really?
Savers. Yeah, Seed Savers, which is a heritage seed group out of Decorah, Iowa, and they sort of believe in seeds as security, right? Being able to have a diversity of agriculture is really the key to building healthy communities. And so they're coming to do a seed swap on Sunday. We also have a really fun event called the Green Mini Demo Derby, which is
fun. Now explain this.
Yeah, that's a fun one. So this is an artistic project of one of our hardcore volunteers' sons, Colin Mathis, who's a fellow in Milwaukee, an art fellow in Milwaukee, and he has this beautiful board of destruction. I don't really know how else to explain it. And each and cars basically like roll around on it. It's all solar powered, so it's these little demolition cars.
Oh, a miniature demolition derby using
solar powered cars, right? Which is just, you know, so at the energy fair there's a lot of high level information, but it's really important to sort of to unload and have fun at the fair too. So that's something that we're doing this year that's different.
Elaine Cozzolino, what role are you playing and what role is Central Rivers Farmshed playing this year?
So the MREA and Farmshed are partnering on the cafe at the Energy Fair. And so we're really excited to be bringing pizzas to the fair, and not just any pizzas. We've worked with Stony Acres. I was actually there last Sunday grinding wheat with them.
Stony Acres is an organic farm in Athens.
That's correct. Yep. And Kat and Tony, and I, we ground wheat. They had canned tomato sauce from last year. We are working with White Feather Organics, on shiitake mushrooms and the Auburndale Food Cooperative to get greens and Maplewood Gardens to get asparagus and all of these different things, coming together to make these pizzas that are completely sourced from local ingredients. Century Sun Oil, sunflower oil, is helping us too. And so it's really a great connection for us because it gets us to, one, bring together all of these producers and make these pizzas out of these locally sourced ingredients, but also connect people to that when they're at the fair.
Central Rivers Farmshed is located in Stevens Point. How's the greenhouse going?
The greenhouse is going well. It's a slower process than when I was originally on here, that's for sure. But it's been a really exciting and amazing process to go through. And we are looking forward to having that community food center up and running. We will be launching a capital campaign by the end of the year.
And you're looking at turning this greenhouse mm-hmm. in downtown Stevens Point into a 365-day-a-year community food center.
That's correct. Yep, complete with two operational greenhouses and about 11,000 square feet. We want to do aquaponics in them. And then we will have a commercial kitchen that does food processing, and then an event and gathering space that we can give educational tours, do workshops, bring in student groups, and really have people learn about food from the ground up.
Well, let's look at some of the keynote speakers. Friday afternoon, Marcin Jakubowski, who will be joining us later in the show. Quite a story. He came from Poland as a child. He'd later graduate with honors from Princeton, and then he got a PhD in fusion physics from the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, yes. And it's funny, you know, he has a TED Talk where he says after all of those accomplishments, he just sort of felt useless. He wanted to do something to, you know, sort of be one with the land and also, you know, build community and change some of these systems that he saw as not positive systems. And so, you know, he'll be talking later on in the hour about how he's doing that with open source ecology. But the open source concept is an amazing concept for any system, really, to provide resources and information for people to learn on their own, you know, whether it's with hardware like Marcin or renewable energy, right? We have a website for folks to go to if they're interested in learning more about, you know, what sort of incentives are available for them or what the process could look like for them getting solar on their home, growsolar.org.
Marcin is quite a visionary. He's got this idea of a global village construction set, and it's just mind-blowing. I had to sit and just ponder it for a while and try to get a handle on it. He's talking about 50 of the most important machines for civilization and then getting the blueprints out to ordinary people, not just the blueprints, but instructions for building these machines so they can build and maintain them at a fraction of the cost and then develop something that he calls closed loop manufacturing and mm-hmm. distribution. So it would all happen on a hyper local level so that small towns and villages, farms and neighborhoods could have their own manufacturing and distribution centers, could build and maintain the machines themselves, all to cut those ties to the big international corporations. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I think the really important part about connecting that to the fair and to FarmShed and to just thinking about how when they first came together, it was how can we make a difference? How can we go back to learning how to do things? It's not just sitting at a computer being told, you know, to send out this email. We need to reconnect on that level and be able to have a greater knowledge base of how do these things actually operate? How do we grow our own food? How do we create technologies that can help us, you know, sustain civilization? And not thinking in the collapse way, but just making sure that those, that knowledge base isn't lost. And I think that that's that do-it-yourself mentality is so important to that.
And collaboration, right? So mm-hmm. anytime you can bring people together to try to develop an idea as strong as possible and one that has everyone's input in it, you know, everyone gets a chance to sort of punch holes in an idea and it just grows and grows and grows. And then with that community buy-in also, any idea is stronger when you get a group of people together.
And Marcin Jakubowski will be sharing his ideas with us in just a few minutes. You're going to be able to hear from this this incredible young man and his ideas. So stay tuned for that. Another keynote speaker, George Seaman of Organic Valley. He's on Saturday morning, June 21st.
Yeah, so George and Organic Valley. George is one of the co-founders of Organic Valley, which is the largest farmer co-op in the country, and they are also celebrating 25 years of cooperative farming. So they're a really fantastic success story of, again, what bringing people together can do. And they are a huge supporter of the fair. They actually will be running breakfasts. So for anyone interested in coming to the fair, anyone planning on coming, make sure you get there early because at 9 o'clock we have Organic Valley breakfasts each day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Farmers come and donate their time and prepare delicious right. food for us. And then actually, so George will be speaking at one of the breakfasts Saturday morning. So folks can come at 8 a.m. and have breakfast and then have breakfast with George Seaman of Organic Valley.
And it was 25 years ago that he joined this group of family farmers in Wisconsin to form something called the Cooperative Regions of Organic Producer Pools, or CROP, now known by Organic Valley and Organic Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now the largest organic farming cooperative in North America, happened right here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, just in Viroqua, and you can find them anywhere, even internationally. So I'm really excited to have him at the fair this year and really be right an example of what kind of success story can happen in the cooperative model.
And Lane Cozzolino, the emphasis on growing produce locally, it's something we're seeing at Central Rivers FarmShed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I forgot to mention, which is really important, is Organic Valley also is a huge contributor to the cafe. All of our cheeses on our pizzas will be from Organic Valley. And they've been an awesome organization both to us, to FarmShed, donating for the Greenhouse Project and helping us get off our feet and really truly believing in the mission of supporting family farmers, and then also this idea of a local food economy.
That whole focus, regional production and distribution instead of shipping produce halfway across the world to our dinner tables.
Yeah, and I think it's connecting people to knowing what's in season, what Wisconsin has to offer. You know, we're very lucky to live in an agricultural region, and we don't just grow corn and soybeans. We grow true vegetable crops. That's what the Central Sands are known for. And so I think it's really important to understand our agricultural heritage and be able to bring that to the tables of the people right here in Central Wisconsin.
And the Energy Fair and the Central Rivers FarmShed websites are both on our Route 51 Facebook page if you would like to plug into that. And if you'd like to leave a comment for us on that page, I'll read it live on the air. Or you can call us at 1-800-780-9742. Central Waters Brewery of Amherst. Now, there's another company that tries to get local sources of hops and barley for their beer.
Yeah, they do a great job. They get, you know, right down the road is where they get their hops and their barley. So I think it's impressive, and I think they would like to grow that even more as they're expanding their brewery, and I think that we'll see really great things from them. Oso's also been collaborating with some local food businesses. Oso's been working with Ruby Coffee Roasters.
What is Oso?
Oh, sorry. Oso Brewery is down
okay.
in Plover. And the distillery that just opened, have you heard about the Great Northern Distillery? So Great Northern also is working with a local farmer to get all their potatoes for their potato vodka. So it is definitely neat to see how these connections are being made and how relationships are truly key to putting these products on
the
table. So
you've got a company actually making vodka out of potatoes.
Potato vodka, the way it's supposed to be done from local Okra potatoes. So
one more thing of note with Central Waters is that they were the first solar-powered brewery in the state. So they have a huge solar thermal array for their heating water during the brewing process. And also a big photovoltaic or solar electric array.
Another keynote speaker, Michael Noble of Fresh Energy, that's Saturday afternoon, June 21st, the CEO of three not-for-profit energy organizations and one for-profit energy services company.
Mm-hmm. So Michael Noble and Fresh Energy are out of Minnesota, and Minnesota is a really fantastic model for solar energy right now, and they're just our next-door neighbor, so it's exciting to think about solar being so successful in the Midwest. You know, it's something that we've been waiting for. But Minnesota right now has some legislation which allows folks to get incentives, homeowners, business owners, to get incentives for buying renewable energy products, solar products that are made and manufactured in Minnesota. So it really keeps the money circling in Minnesota, and it's been going really well for them. And like I said, that's not far away. You know, it's not Germany, it's Minnesota.
And then on Sunday afternoon, your final keynote speaker, that's Sunday afternoon, June 22nd. We're talking about an event that's not happening this weekend, but next weekend. You have Leilani Munter, who is the rare combination of a race car driver and an environmental activist.
Yeah, she's a vegan hippie chick who drives a NASCAR. she is a renewable energy advocate. She also drives a Tesla. She likes to be an example of what sustainable living can be. And although her passion is racing, she has a biology background. And for every race she's in, she donates to save forests. So she's trying to be carbon neutral also.
Yeah,
and I think
carbon neutral racing. So every time she does a race, she adopts an acre of rainforest to offset the carbon footprint of that race.
Right, which is just so thoughtful to think about. You know, there's this passion, but there's a consequence for it too. And to neutralize that, that's something that she's all about. So she actually will be racing in Minnesota on the 21st and then driving on over to Custer, Wisconsin to talk with us on Saturday or Sunday about her.
Well, maybe someday we'll see racing with electric cars.
That would be fantastic.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. And the Tesla, for example, is her car of choice. And I'm sure many people would choose to drive it. It's a fantastic car. But it gets 257 miles per charge. And it's a 0 to 60 kind of car. This isn't some sort of, you know, living in caveman days. It's a it's a beautiful vehicle. So and I don't think it's too far away. And at the Energy Fair, actually, we will be having car charging stations available for reservation. So for folks that do own electric vehicles, come to the fair and we can make sure you get charged up and make it home.
And again, that's Sunday afternoon. Leilani Munter, the number one eco-athlete of the year, according to Discovery's Planet Green. Glamour magazine called her an eco-hero. Elle magazine awarded her their Genius Award. And Sports Illustrated named her one of the top 10 female race car drivers in the world, an environmental activist who's also a NASCAR driver.
Yep, and I think it's a fantastic partnership, right? There's an audience maybe that would rather watch a NASCAR race, and she's able to connect that, you know, and share her message of social justice and environmental justice with all sorts of audiences.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. My guests for the first portion of this show, Ellie Jackson of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association and Lane Cozzolino of Central Rivers Farm Shed of Stevens Point. We're talking about the 25th annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair. When we return, hang on to your hats, a visionary young man named Marcin Jakubowski of Open Source Ecology, when we return on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Bring the car off spring. Oh, yeah. Green can be cool and friendly life. And green can be bright like an ocean. Or part like a mountain.
Thank you.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Greenwood Hills Country Club, Wausau, helping the community one round at a time with Make a Difference Mondays, a day open for all golfers to enjoy a round of golf while benefiting a Wausau area charity. Details at greenwoodhillscc.com.
We are back on Route 51 as we preview the 25th annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, scheduled for the weekend of June 20th in rural Custer, Wisconsin, just east of Stevens Point. A reminder, you have the chance to win free weekend passes to the event on our webpage, that's wisconsinpublicradio.org/central. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've got Ellie Jackson of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association with us. Also, Lane Cozzolino of Central Rivers Farmshed. And we are joined now by Friday's keynote speaker, Marcin Jakubowski of Open Source Ecology, who's also hosting a workshop that week at Mid-State Technical College in Wisconsin Rapids. Now, if you'd like to speak to Marcin, or if you've got thoughts about why it's taking so long for America and the world to move toward green alternate sources of energy, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can leave a comment on our Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it on the air. Marcin Jakubowski, tell us about what you'll be speaking about Friday afternoon. And again, that's June 20th at the Energy Fair.
Yeah, great. So the talk will be about the work of Open Source Ecology. As a founder of it, we've been at it for a few years now. So we're working on the Global Village Construction Set, which is a set of the 50 different industrial machines that it takes to build a small civilization with modern comforts. It's an open source platform and an open source project where we collaboratively develop and document all these different tools, everything from a tractor to an oven to a circuit maker. The one device that we'll be actually showcasing at the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair will be the brick press. It's an automated, large-scale brick press for producing compressed earth bricks from local soils. And
now that's also the subject of the workshop that you're doing at Mid-State Technical College in Wisconsin Rapids. That's June 17th, 18th, and 19th. And according to your website, it says the three-day workshop shows how extreme manufacturing techniques are used to build a complete automated compressed hearth brick press in one day.
Yep, and that's the name of our game. That is to produce machines efficiently. So what we'll be doing is spending that workshop in an immersion training experience where in the second day we'll be building the brick press as a collaborative crowd, basically a crowd swarming process where all of us, all the workshop participants build a part of the machine, all the different modules of the machine rapidly together, and then we assemble the machine in that during that workshop.
And another quote from your webpage, you say the workshop is intended for people interested in transitioning from zero to maker. Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, the whole point is that in this society we've been de-skilled in many ways, and our educations are not giving us a lot of practical skills. So the focus of this is to get those skills back into people's hands to make a productivity accessible to anybody, and not only for, you know, very simple things like, you know, we can do things like gardening, but also for the whole technosphere. How do we actually make technology accessible to people? That is by reskilling, to basically simplifying design, making it much more transparent, human-centric, so that anyone can participate with it, as opposed to that being the realm of specialists and experts.
Mm-hmm. How do people sign up for the workshop, Marcin?
Yeah, to go to the workshop, for the workshop, there's a couple of sign-ups. One is on our website, which is opensourceecology.org. If you go to the workshops page, you'll see the brick press workshop featured on the workshops part of opensourceecology.org. So that's the immediate forthcoming workshop. We also have another workshop coming up on the 4th of July weekend where we build out a power cube, which is a hydraulic power unit that powers all the different devices in the Global Village Construction Set, such as the brick press or a tractor.
Lane Cozzolino, Ellie, you've got a question for Marchin.
Oh, well, I was just going to mention that there are still seats available for the workshop, so if people are interested in learning more about this open source concept and learning how to do hands-on, you know, work developing this compressed earth brick machine with Marchin, that they can sign up. There's still seats available.
Mm-hmm. And Marchin, what is your mission at Open Source Ecology?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that is, so we're talking about building a platform for building all these different machines, but really the greater picture is about creating an open collaborative development method which can be used in society to generate the products that we create. So pretty much it's about accelerating development on technology and also other areas of society, but the main part being how do we leverage collaborative techniques as opposed to proprietary closed development that happens behind closed doors in corporations. How do we bring that kind of productive power to a more localized, decentralized method of production as a new model of what can happen given the access to the knowledge and technology that we have in today's society?
What is an open source economy?
So open source refers to the open sharing of blueprints of the source code. It comes from the world of open software, where people have open source software, where people developed code together and they shared the actual source code for programs. Then what happens if you take that to physical goods? What happens when you start collaborating on the design of physical goods? And that's called the world of open source hardware. And because open source hardware refers to the physical artifacts of civilization, I mean, then you talk about, well, how does that create an economy? So the point is, develop open products, develop an open economy that relies on open collaborative sharing of information so that everybody benefits, so that everybody has access to the best design as opposed to just a few people having the best things and everyone kind of struggles along.
So are you just giving away the technology and the blueprints for these 50 greatest machines of human civilization? And if you're doing that, how do you make a living? How are you able to continue staying in business so that you can pursue your mission?
Absolutely, yes. We are giving everything away for free. So you can download the plans from our website for the brick press. You can build it yourself, or you can come to the workshop to learn how to build it, or you can buy the machine from us. The point is that we share the collaborative effort with everybody. It's open. It's an open process. The blueprints are absolutely freely downloadable, no barriers at all. But we can still produce the machines and sell them. So, for example, the workshop, it's a revenue-generating opportunity where the tuition pays us to continue this work and put all the money back into the development, or we simply sell the physical product. I mean, we have clients that we can actually produce these machines for. The bottom line is the brick press is a good example.
Yeah.
It's 4,000 in materials. We sell these for $9,000, and the nearest competitor for the same kind of power machine will charge you about $52,000. So by the collaborative development and simplifying, making it just much, much more simple, we are reducing the price drastically while retaining the same performance. So we simply compete on an economic playing field.
So you're actually selling this brick press for a fifth of what you could buy it for on the open market.
That's exactly right.
You call this a life-size, scalable, modular Lego construction set in which you're building not just individual machines, but construction sets for machines. In other words, not just the machines, but machines to make the machines.
Yep. Exactly right. There's the concept of one aspect is that some of the machines are production machines, like a CNC torch table or a milling machine with which you can produce other machines. The other aspect is that the design we do focuses on readily accessible stock parts, such as if you look at our tractor, it's made of 4x4-inch square tubing with holes, which means that it allows us to be super flexible. All the parts can be interchanged. There's modular power units, modular wheel units, all kinds of implements. But basically, if we design a machine, we're designing it such that, for example, with a LifeTrack construction set, you can build not only a tractor, but also a microtractor, a bulldozer, a truck, and any other implements. So while we're at it, we might as well design a set that is generative, something that allows you literally to have something like a life-size Lego set. And the interesting part is that we're finding out that it's working.
If you just joined us, we're talking to Marcin Jakubowski. He is the executive director of Open Source Ecology. He's a keynote speaker Friday afternoon, June 20th, at the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair in Custer, Wisconsin. If you've got a question or a comment for Marcin, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. He will be here for just another 5 or 10 minutes, so make that phone call if you want to make it. And I want to remind you that Open Source Ecology, their website is on our Route 51 Facebook page as well. How do you decide which of these machines were most essential for modern civilized life? You came up with a list of 50. How did you come up with that list?
We essentially go through the essential parts of society that everyone partakes in, what we need, things like food, energy, transportation. So we take each one of these sector by sector and select the most relevant tools. Like, for example, if all of us eat, therefore we're involved in agriculture directly or indirectly, and for that, I mean, obviously the common tool for doing that is a tractor. Or if you talk about producing energy, what do you do for that? For that, we have chosen a windmill, a solar concentrator electric system, nickel iron batteries, modern steam power. There's just common ways of going about these things. So for production, I mean, obviously there's things like CNC milling machines, drill presses, circuit mills, basic fabrication. So those tools we put all in the set. And we also dog food the concept because...
What do you mean by dog food?
Yeah, that means as we develop the tools, we use them. So we're not just doing this directly for somebody else, but it's really a seat of the pants. We need this. For example, the brick press, we built it because we needed to build infrastructure here. Or the tractor. Our tractors kept breaking, so we had to build our own. And we go further to basically to get a deep level of experience to show and know what's really appropriate and necessary, especially when you're a small producer and someone who wants to take full responsibility for their equipment infrastructure.
Now, Marcin, you also operate a 30-acre farm in Missouri called the Factor E Farm. You bought it in 2004. It was just a soybean field. How has it changed since then?
Yeah, I mean, we've planted an orchard of a few hundred trees since then. We are running a couple of acres of agriculture right now where we're intending to use the micro tractor for weeding and use the tractor already to do some of the soil preparation. Right now we've got a couple of buildings like a workshop, a greenhouse, a living unit. So we're building up the infrastructure continuously. We're adding more workshops. So basically it's turning out to a small community, basically a research and development center that will focus on education and training.
What does the letter E stand for in the name Factor E Farm?
Yeah, Factor E Farm. So the play on words there is that we're not a Factor E Farm. We're a Factor E Farm. The E stands, it's a transcendental number. So it talks about the concept of we aim to transcend the things that exist in civilization. So we build on industry standards and transcend to make a better world. So E is a natural E.
Marcin, you've got an interesting backstory, too. You immigrated to America from Poland. Tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Yeah, I was born in Poland, came to America at the age of 10, 1982. And that was at the time when tanks were rolling down my streets in communist Poland. And, yes, that wasn't the parade. That was the real time of material scarcity behind the Iron Curtain. So coming to America was an amazing transformative experience to see all that abundance in the stores, first time walking into a grocery store and just have all these brands of all these different products where before you might just have some vinegar and bread on the shelves, things like that. Then I ended up going to Princeton undergrad, then University of Wisconsin-Madison, to discover that I was useless through my education because I wasn't learning the practical applied things.
Well, you got a PhD in fusion physics. You know, not everybody can do that.
Yeah, so certainly I was motivated for the power of science, doing good things for the world, but the farther I was going, I wasn't feeling any more useful or any more prepared to tackle with the real issues of society, just the big, hairy problems that are out there. Instead, we were just getting into more detailed and theoretical things in the program. So,
well, why are you working with Open Source Ecology instead of trying to use your education and figure out how to make fusion physics work as an inexhaustible clean source of energy?
Right. So just like with anything, there's many issues. Like with fusion energy, we're still a bit away from that. We're, you know, the running joke is that it's going to be 10 years into the future. It always was, and it always will be. But, I mean, there are certainly issues with that, such as radioactivity, not as much as nuclear power, but still there. So why not tap much more easy solutions like solar power? Because we do know that the sun shines at us 10,000 times more power than we use today. So let's leave it out there 93 million miles away and tap it on Earth here. So using tools such as the solar concentrator electric power system that's within our set. So I believe a lot of times there's just simpler solutions that we're not tapping as we are in a rat race or in the present economy, which doesn't make sense. So we're just trying to get back to some basics and explore, you know, how can we do better?
Now, we've heard about something called cold fusion. Is there anything to that, or is it a big hoax?
There might be something to it. I'm not following it enough closely enough. I've heard reputable sources say that it does work. Not qualified to comment fully on it, but all I say is for others interested in exploring options, okay, that may or may not work, but we do know that solar works, so why don't we do that right now and do one thing at a time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ellie?
Just seconding, you know, we have the solar technology now, we have the wind technology now, and something that I like to think about is, you know, if someone were to come to your door and offer cheap fuel, right? Mm-hmm. If you could just buy in bulk right now cheap fuel that you knew was going to last the next 30 years, you had to come up with an upfront cost, but you knew it was going to power your furnace and your stove and your lights, you know, someone would have to be a fool to say no to that, knowing that energy costs are going to keep rising. There's mm-hmm. no chance that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so to think about it like that, if someone were to come to your door and say, I've got this whole package of natural gas, take it to power your furnace. That's what solar is. You know, it's an upfront mm-hmm. cost that we have right now, and people can invest in it and know that warranted for their technology, 30 years of production and then beyond.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just seconding so that we have that technology now, and
yeah,
that's what we're excited to
know.
And Lane Cozzolino, do you have anything you'd like to say to Marcin while he's with us?
Well, I'm really excited about what he's been doing. I've been watching them for a couple of years now, and I just think that I think it kind of goes back to those comments that I said earlier. It's getting back to teaching people how to do things, and that's the most important piece of what we've lost in modern civilization is this knowledge base of how do the things work around us. And I love that he's bringing that back, and I wish I could take the workshop, but I'll be working for the cafe.
you know, Marcin, a lot of this sounds kind of pie in the sky and utopian to people. From your website again, the end point of our practical development is distributive enterprise, an open collaborative enterprise that publishes all of its strategic business organizational enterprise information so that others can learn and thereby truly accelerate innovation by annihilating all forms of competitive waste. We see that this is the only way to solve wicked problems faster than they are created. So you're giving away this technology. The idea is people will be developing hyper-local manufacturing and distribution systems on a local level. How many people have told you're crazy to be pursuing this?
Yeah, everyone says that. I mean, it's a really hairy, ambitious goal. I mean, technologically, there's nothing that says it can't be done. And we're going so far as to say, like our farm right here, 30 acres, the requirements for modern civilization are rocks, sunlight, plants, soil, and water. Hey, we've got it here. So you can do things such as go up to extracting aluminum from clay or aluminosilicate or extracting silicon from sand. I mean, those things are abundant. So if we talk about the advanced civilization, metal, or the digital age, which is silicon, that's everywhere. So with the presence of solar energy, which is also abundant, we talked about the 10,000 times figure, as far as what the sun shines at us today compared to what we use, we can tap open information flows and the abundance of energy to create, as you said, hyperlocal advanced economies on any parcel of land. So, yes, that is a crazy idea, but we're going at it step by step to make it happen.
Let's go to the phones right now. We have Tony from Athens. And, Tony, I believe you're from Stony Acres Farm, right?
You got me. I was trying to be semi-anonymous, but yes.
Nice try, Tony.
I love the show. I love the show, Glenn. I love the discussion of appropriate technology, which is, I think, incredibly important for broadening empowerment and, as your guest said, the means which is very important for having a real democracy, to have broad means. That's an important discussion. I love the Energy Fair, and I love all of your guests' work. And my question is, the culture of the Energy Fair has always been what I would call somewhat hippie, which I personally enjoy. But at the same time, that sort of culture may be a barrier to mainstreaming our hopes for renewable energy and sustainable living. But in the last couple of years, especially solar energy has come down so much in price by like 75% that the mainstream is taking much more of an interest. I wonder if you think that the Energy Fair is changing the culture of our society, or the culture of our society could change the culture of the Energy Fair.
All right, I'll tell you what. We are way overdue for a break right now. Tony, I'm going to keep you on the air right now, and we're going to have Lane and Ellie answer your question when we come back. And Marcin Jakubowski, thanks so much for being with us. We're really looking forward to seeing you at the Energy Fair on Friday, June 20th, and again that workshop at Mid-State Technical College, June 17th, 18th, and 19th in Wisconsin Rapids. Marcin, thanks so much.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
We'll be back right after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, presenting exhibitions featuring upcycled couture fashion and fiber arts on view through June 15th. Details about how to repurpose and reimagine everyday items at lywam.org.
Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another right now.
All right, well, I guess that's an appropriate song since Tony from Athens is asking whether or not we are getting away from the hippie culture that used to dominate the Energy Fair in previous years. Sounds like Tony has left us.
All right, well, hopefully he's still listening. Yeah, Tony, that's a fantastic question. And certainly, you know, as we started with a small group of sort of live-off-the-land DIYers in Amherst, Wisconsin, and now we are, you know, seeing, right, the solar industry grow and become a more corporate industry. You know, how do we balance that? So I have a couple of thoughts as to how the Energy Fair feeds into that and what solar looks like today. So first of all, I would say that, right, the hippie culture is sort of it's still very much a part of the Energy Fair, but really the smartest people in the room are investing in solar and investing in renewable energy because, like Tony mentioned, the numbers just make sense right now. You know, not that long ago, solar was twice as expensive as it is today, whereas today, you know, for a large-scale install, a large solar field, you know, you could install solar for something like $1.50 to $2 a watt, whereas twice as much just a few years ago. For a smaller scale, a residential install, it's something like $3.50 a watt, where it was something like $6 or $7 just a few years ago. So the numbers really have come down. And like I said before, if someone were to come to your front door and say, hey, you know, I'm selling a whole bunch of energy, just there's an upfront cost, but it'll pay off so much in the long run, especially considering, you know, the rising energy costs.
And there are so many workshops. You've got a workshop on sustainable agriculture, sustainable living, wind systems, solar heating and cooling, solar voltaics, an educator tent, community involvement and activism, clean transportation, build your own electric car or motorcycle is one of the workshops, alternate construction and green building, build your own pizza oven, your own rustic log furniture, finances and economics. It's really an amazing list of things going on that weekend.
It's an impressive, and you know, I can say that because I invite all of these really impressive people to come and present, and they're really experts. And so one thing I think that is fantastic about sort of the hippie feel of the fair is that it's inclusive. There is information for anyone at any level, and no one's trying to judge. Everyone's just trying to learn and connect. And the Energy Fair oftentimes is described as NASA meets Woodstock. So there is an element of really high-end information, right? Soil science and talking about systemic change and talking about photovoltaics and from experts, not only folks that have PhDs, but also folks that have been doing this for 25 years, and that's the NASA. And the Woodstock is, you know, at the end of the day, we're all sponges of information at the fair, but we get to celebrate and dance and have great food and delicious Central Waters beer, and that's sort of the Woodstock, so it's important to have both.
And a lot of music, Proto, a group of funky progressive rock jammers, Natty Nation, Sunday Morning, the polka music of Norm Dombrowski's Happy Notes, Tom Pease appears, Eddie Danger, Galen Goodwill on Saturday afternoon, and Baba Ganoush on Friday night. Boy, what a lineup, and also Patchouli. So all of those entertainers, and boy, we are out of time, ladies. We are completely out of time.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And we do want to thank today's guests, Ellie Jackson of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, also Lane Cozzolino of Central Rivers Farm Shed, Marcin Jakubowski, founder of Open Source Ecology. You can find out more about his company at opensourceecology.org, all one word. And he will also be conducting a brick press workshop June 17th through the 19th at Mid-State Technical College in Wisconsin Rapids. He'll be speaking at the Energy Fair on Friday afternoon, June 20th. That fair takes place that weekend in Custer, Wisconsin on Highway 10 east of Stevens Point. You can find out more at the website midwestrenew.org, all one word, midwestrenew.org. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Greyer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by George Harrison, Van Morrison, The Fifth Dimension, Tower of Power, Jesse Colin Young, and Louis Armstrong. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.
I think to myself, what a wonderful